Learn more about the fascinating journey of Ibn Battuta, the first ever travel writing by Ibn Jubayr, and the courageous Chinese explorers Hing He. We bring you stories from the travels and lives of nine Muslim explorers that brought us modern-day geography, map-making, and cross-border trade. Mondays to Fridays during Ramadan 2016 at 8:15 a.m. Repeats at 6:50 p.m. The Global Village, the vast expanse of an unknown world discovered. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
824 years ago, the father of the travelogue genre set out on a two-year trip that saw one brave man and his companion travel thousands of kilometers from Granada and back again. The genre of travel writing, or the travelogue, was born on board a ship in the year 1183. Friday, the 25th of February, to be precise, corresponding to the 30th of Shawwal, 578 after Hijri. A two-year journey coinciding with one of the most dangerous times in history, the build-up to the Third Crusade. Abul Hassan Muhammad ibn Ahmed ibn Jubair al-Kinani, the Andalusian, was born in Valencia in the year 1145, 540 years after Hijri. His great-grandfather, Abdul Salam ibn Jubair, was part of the vanguard that entered Granada in the year 123 after Hijri, after which the family settled in Valencia. In his Chronicles of Granada, Ibn al-Khatib describes him with great reverence and admiration. He was a brilliant man of letters, a glorious poet, a virtuous Sunni, honest of work, of excellent character, and gracious manners with elegant handwriting. He studied in Ceuta, under the tutelage of Abu Sayyid Uthman Abdul Mu'min, and in Granada, under many others from his relatives, for whom he wrote many poems in their extolment. He then went to the Orient, and along the way, many debates and correspondences took place between him and a few authors of his time, correspondences which featured his proficiency and fluency. His composition is superior, and his prose is exquisite. His flowing words are pleasing and easy to understand. His exigencies are grand. His qualities are prodigious, famed around the world. And his sender, plain good and purposes of the great, huge advantages, and mentioned a famous, and his journey took on a life of its own and reached far and wide. May Allah have mercy on him. He set out from his home in Granada along with his friend and travel companion Ahmed ibn Hassan in the first hour of Thursday, the 8th Shawwal 578, February the 3rd, 1183. Their first stop was at Ja'in, where they stayed for about 11 days conducting some business, leaving again on the 14th of February, passing through forts and towns, moving south, and finally reaching the island of Tarifa on the 26th of Shawwal. From there, he set out to Ceuta and the open sea beyond. All in all, Ibn Jubair's journey took 2 years and 2 months. Him and his friend returned safely to Granada on the 22nd of Muharram, and not too long after that, he sat down and gave us the very first travelogue in history of travel writing. A book that made a considerable impact on literary history. His account of his travels and tribulations in the East served as the foundational work of a new genre of writing, the Rihla, or creative travelogue, a mix of personal narrative, description, opinion, and anecdote. In following centuries, countless people emulated and even plagiarized him. He didn't just write a clinical geographical book about the places he visited, he recorded his own personal experiences and observations of the people he met, the places he visited or passed through, the politics of the time, even the details of the different weather phenomenon and storms that seem to have plagued them throughout the sea voyage, spiced with his anecdotes, poetry, and Quranic verses here and there. It provides a first-hand account of what the Mediterranean region was at that time, something that still sheds light on our current affairs, many of which seem to eerily mirror some of the events of a very muddled part of human history. Accounts taken from Rihla ibn Jubair, the travels of Ibn Jubair, are particularly valuable for his numerous first-hand observations regarding the Muslims in both eastern and western parts during a time when the reach of Islamic governance was in decline. In fact, soon, his beloved Valencia would be lost to the forces of King James I of Aragon and would never return to the Muslims. Yet, when we read Ibn Jubair's moving accounts of oppressed Muslims in Norman Sicily, we feel that Ibn Jubair must have felt that Islamic rule in the western parts was coming to an end. Prior to this, however, Ibn Jubair visited Alexandria in the spring of 1183, a visit which left a profound impression on him, especially the city's famous lighthouse. Throughout his work, Ibn Jubair praises the achievements of Islam, most particularly the establishment of hospitals and madrasas, particularly those within Damascus, which, as a city he describes, as one of the friendliest places he had ever visited, and that it surpasses all other cities in its beauty, referring to it as the paradise of the Orient. One of the most insightful accounts of Sicilian Muslims is provided by Ibn Jubair, returning from the east via Sicily in 1185. His visit lasted less than 4 months, and his encounters with Muslims were all made along the north coast between Messina and Trapani. It was in Messina that Ibn Jubair met a high-ranking royal official who had chosen to protect himself by concealing his Muslim faith. In Palermo, he met Ibn al-Hajar, a respected Muslim leader who deplored his own condition to the point of regretting that he had not been sold away in slavery to a Muslim country. He expressed a wish to meet Ibn Jubair, and they talked. In this conversation, Ibn al-Hajar stated that he and all of his relatives only desired to sell all they had and thus be liberated from their woes and be free to live in Muslim lands. When Jubair parted from Ibn al-Hajar, he wept and made them weep. The nobility of his lineage, the singular gifts of his character, the fine earnestness of his life, his charity toward relatives, his liberty, the beauty of his person and soul, moved us deeply, said Ibn Jubair. Ibn Jubair also contrasts the favorable situation of Palermo Muslims, who had many masajid with teachers of Quran, were allowed to call the adhan, practiced as merchants, and had their own qadi for settlement of their legal disputes. However, even here, the position of Muslims was actually precarious, since they depended on royal protection. Muslim parents had difficulties in coping with children who could throw off parental restraints by embracing Christianity. Muslims wanting official posts had to change or conceal their faith. With a concise writing style, alternating citations of Quranic verses, brief, fervent prayers and lines of poetry, Ibn Jubair offered suggestive images of the lands he traversed, drawing the landscapes, cities, villages and markets with an astonishing attention to detail. His exhaustive descriptions of mosques, tombs and other monuments are still of great help to archaeologists and art historians today. 4 years later, he returned to the Arab East, although his Rihla of First Soyun makes no reference to these later 2 years of travel. When he was 72 years old, he undertook his last trip, passing through Mecca, Jerusalem and Egypt, where he died in Alexandria on September 29th, 1217. The Rihla and two poems are all he left behind. Join us in part 8 as we acquaint you with the early days of world traveler Ibn Battuta and introduce you to the environment in which he lived, inshallah.
The Global Village has been researched and compiled by Hafidha Rayhana Umar, narrated by Tufail Patel, overseen by Mufti Yusuf Musaji, a production of Radio Islam.